Finding Our Way is proudly sponsored by Berghaus, a team of people united by their passion for the outdoors and who are working hard to create more diversity in the sports we love. For more detailed information, go and have a look at the episode description. Hello, I'm Marianne O'Hotter and welcome to Finding Our Way, the podcast from the British Mountaineering Council, aka the BMC. It's all about diversifying the voices we normally hear talking about the outdoors. So in each episode, we talk to folk who are usually busy climbing, mountaineering or walking, and we find out what they've learned from their adventures and explore what the rest of us can learn from them too. So think good chat, memorable stories, and hopefully some insight and inspiration from people who are making real change happen. Joining us today are two of the directors from United We Climb. They're a relatively new organisation and they're committed to helping people who are currently underserved and underrepresented in climbing and the outdoors. They create opportunities and events for people to get involved that are safe and welcoming, but they also, perhaps crucially, work with the climbing and outdoor industry to identify and remove barriers to better, more inclusive access. Connecting with us from London, welcome Marie Yuri, who uses she/her pronouns, and Yasmin Lazarus, who uses she/her pronouns. Hello, welcome both.
Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Thanks for coming on Finding Our Way.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so first of all, tell me who you are, how you got into climbing, mountain sports, what kind of things you guys get up to?
I'm Yasmin. By day, I'm a child and educational psychologist. And I think that feeds my passion to sort of understand people and their behaviour. And that comes into my role in United We Climb too. But by hobby, I am a paraclimber. Which means I'm a climber with disabilities and chronic illnesses. I got into climbing maybe about 8 years ago now. I kind of stumbled upon it. A friend of mine wanted to take me for many years. I actually felt too self-conscious for a long time. I felt like I wouldn't be accepted within any kind of sporting community. But when I tried it, much to my surprise, it was amazing. People were cheering me on no matter what. You know, I think I was doing the easiest climb in the center. And very quickly, I wanted to go outdoor climbing, and I did. I've always been in the girl guiding movement as well. So I've always had a passion for the outdoors, and I wanted to marry those two up as well. Slowly, I kind of weaved my way into the community a bit more and really saw that the climbing community is amazing, but that has a long way to go in terms of various things. And I'm really excited by the work that we're doing with United We Climb to, start that journey.
And how about you, Marie?
So how did I start? So I saw a friend climbing in Brazil and I was, that looked really cool. And I wanted to start doing it, but I didn't know how. And I contacted a friend and she took me to climbing and showed me how to do things. What happened then is I couldn't climb without her, so I went and I took a course. So I knew how to do like a few of eight and how to belay. And after that, I think I got completely hooked. I started climbing just because it was so interesting. And I think at the time when I started climbing, I didn't think about the way I look, who I was. I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to climb, to be fair. And a couple of years later, my friend Bobby was like, I'm really glad you stuck to it because there's not many people looking like you doing it. What she meant, like my size, because I was a little bit bigger, and also as a black woman, there were not many people my colour doing it. But I was just so passionate about it. And then a couple of years into climbing, I joined a club, the Marylebone Mountaineering Club, and they were so welcoming, and it's like a little family, and we go away on the weekends, and this is how I got completely hooked with the climbing. So I weave in between bouldering, top rope, leading. But my favorite is trad climbing. And it's really interesting now. Once I joined the United We Climb organization, I feel privileged in a sense. I felt that I was privileged to come into this sport, and I want to share it with everyone, and I want to help people to get into it because it's not easy. And I think the work we do with United Women is quite important. It's not just about diversifying climbing, but also, you know, representing different people, type of people, you know, bodies, abilities. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell how I got into climbing.
So both of you have described that first experience of climbing as being kind of relatively frictionless, maybe, that you did find people who were welcoming, who were at the wall or in the mountaineering club, who kind of went, yeah, sure, you're in, come join us, let's have fun. So doesn't that mean that there's no problem, that people are welcoming, yeah, that it doesn't matter what color you are, what size you are, what other I'm getting okay, fill me in. Break down where it's going wrong then.
And I'm going to take this one because it's very simple. Simple and complex at the same time. I would say when I was going away with my club, I could tell that I wasn't the norm. I was the only black woman in the club. So we were going to the lakes, Piccadilly Street, wherever we were going. The thing is, when you go outside of London, you get a little bit more stares, or you got a little bit macroaggression, or just like condescending little comment like, oh, well done, you went up there. Oh, my God, you climb. Yes, I'm on full kit. What else? But the thing is, like, at the time, because it was within the club, you don't want to bring that back to the club. You're here for a good time. Also, I met so many other people who tell you they have a different experience and mine, you know, coming into climbing. So climbing, yes, the climbing community is welcoming, but there are pockets of the climbing community who's not understanding the whole diversity things. And, you know, like, I have a very interesting conversation not long ago about people who are in the little bubble. They've been climbing with the same people. They might have people, diverse people, into they you know, the environment, but maybe it's the diverse people never told them about the struggle, never told them about whatever they experience. So those people are unaware of this, and for them it's just what it is. It's like, oh yes, we're all welcoming, we love everyone, but they don't know about the struggle or everyone, and they're not aware of it because all they're interested in is the climbing, nothing else. They're not interested of like what's happening in politics, and not interested of like people struggling or anything. All the interesting is in, and you know, like, you can't. I mean, I try to be compassionate and understanding with people like that, but I try also to inform them that actually it's not plain sailing all the time. There are issues within the climbing communities.
Right, because I mean, I've heard that phrase that the crag doesn't see colour. But I guess that's kind of a little bit naive, because climbing operates within society, and society definitely does see colour and size and disability and all the rest of it. Is that the kind of essence of it, Yasmin?
Well, I was going to say as well, yeah, I completely agree with Marie that we are very London-centric. We are so used to sort of walking out, going to our local wall, and actually it is a bit more representative, not loads, but a little bit more. And I think actually when you're new to climbing, you don't notice the microaggressions as well. As I think, I wonder if Marie had the same experience as me. I'm also a plus size climber. I didn't notice those sort of condescending comments. And for me, when I was a new climber, beta spraying and that kind of stuff was almost appreciated. But now I'm a more advanced...
Okay, wait, pause. As a non-climber... What?
So beta spraying is where someone will almost tell you how to do a climb unsolicited. So you might want to work it out for yourself, and actually they're telling you, assuming that you can't do it, and there's, and it's spraying because everyone goes, saying it at you unsolicited, in an unsolicited way.
And that's called beta spraying.
Beta spraying, because beta is, beta is sort of like the knowledge of a route.
Okay.
And obviously spraying is just the of words. So yeah, I received a lot of that at the beginning, but for me at the beginning, it didn't feel like, because you're anyone's a beginner, and actually beginners want help. But now I'm 8 years down the line and people assume I'm a beginner because of my size, or assume I'm a beginner because of my disability. Then you start to see those microaggressions. So I think when you're a beginner, you're almost blinded a lot to it, which in a way is good, because I did feel, I think if I'd have felt the way I did now about that, I wouldn't have felt as welcome. And I think, yeah, the other thing for me, and this is a very personal thing, is that I have just become more disabled over time. I was not as disabled as I was when I started climbing. So I've noticed that a lot more. But yeah, I completely agree with Marie in that being London-centric is like being in a bubble. It really is.
Right. Okay. And when your London clubs or London groups of friends go out into those non-London venues, if you're trail climbing, walking out for the weekend or whatever, do they notice your experience, those little looks or I don't know, guess comments made when you're at a kind of a site getting your kit ready?
I don't think they do. And I don't think it's fair for me to just like tell them, actually, this happened. Because when you're in a club, like for example, I'm on drinking, people work all week and they want to go outside and just climb. And the people I'm with, they're very welcoming, they're family, and you know, I love them to bits. And we always, you know, we're supportive of each other, but sometimes you have to pick your battle and when to have those battles. And I think at the times where I was going out with them, I choose not to, because I was like, that's not the time. And so we never really talk about diversity. I mean, maybe we talk once, but I don't think for them it matters that much. As long as you know how to belay properly, you're not taking the rope, and you are very safe. And like, you know, we didn't lose anyone. You know, the hikers didn't lose anyone, or we didn't leave anyone behind as climbers and stuff like that. It was fair. It was so, you know, sometimes you have to weigh out where to bring those conversation or not. And does it worth it, in a sense? Because you don't know how it's going to go.
Right. So that means that you're doing, not only dealing with whatever that little altercation was, you're also dealing with the, okay, well, what do I do with that information? Do I share it with the group and make it all about race all of a sudden? Or do we just kind of, do I get my head down and focus on the climbing? And you're still carrying that experience and that work. Yeah.
But also, like, carrying that experience means that I am able to deal with it in a certain way. So now I can talk about it and I can make it better for other people. This is what it's about. So, like I said, you have to pick your battles. And it's not all the time you have to go to war. And I have to say sometimes, I don't want to fight. I just want to go for a climb. So, but I still want to have those conversations when is the right place and the right moment. I don't want to have always to, you know, have the conflict and have the hard discussion, because sometimes it's not the right time.
Yeah. But you have United We Climb, which I'm guessing is very much the right time and the right place. On your website, you describe yourself as a Jedi organisation, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion. Tell me what that means and what is it that you do at United We Climb?
Most people, yeah, are quite familiar with DEI almost without the J. But I want to emphasise the sort of equity part of it rather than using the term equality. I think we like to talk about equity because it's not about equality. It's about making sure that those that have the needs get the resource. It's not that everyone gets the same resource. It's that those with the most need get the most resource. And that's a big priority of ours. And those that need the most representation, that have the least, get the most from us almost.
An example of that might be subsidised training courses for people from ethnic backgrounds that are not majority white, for example.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Because that actually levels the playing field rather than just going, yes, anyone can apply. That's exactly fair. It's not fair. Right, okay.
Exactly. So, yeah, we have a big focus on that. And as we've said, we sort of noticed, we know that in the outdoors, even research tells us now, there's been an abundance of research that in the outdoors, lots of underserved communities, underrepresented communities are not accessing the same resource. They are not accessing anything that, you know, we might hope they are. And we would like there to be a way that we can help that. So that's a big part of what we do, for sure.
So that's getting underrepresented communities into climbing, into these outdoor activities. What about the work that you do with industry and the workforce?
So I think that we also noticed that actually a lot of the reasons there are two kind of prongs of this. A lot of the reasons that there are gaps are because of the attitudes, the gaps in itself in the workforce, in the industry, the way sort of the industry is set up is not accessible to these populations, but also not representative. That's the other prong. The industry itself is not representative of people who would like to climb, people who are accessing climbing or would like to access climbing. And I think that double prong is really contributing to sort of the lack of empowerment we're seeing from these populations. And so, yeah, a lot of the work that we're doing is to try and tackle both those prongs. We'd like to sort of empower industry to be more representative, but also empower industry to have the tools to make climbing a more accessible, a more representative, a more equitable place for everyone. And I think that actually what's been my experience so far is that a lot of climbing walls in particular do want to do this. They just really actually don't know how, or they've got the wrong idea of how to do this. And so actually it does seem to be that we've got a big role for that ahead of us.
Okay. So, I mean, that is the gazillion dollar question, isn't it? So, okay, we've got an issue. Perhaps people overall agree with that. Some people don't, but let's assume you do. How do you go about doing it, and what is the wrong way of doing it?
I mean, we have partnership with a few climbing walls and like a few brands, and they want to support us. And what I want to say about like brands and places supporting, when you're supporting, just don't do just one project and then bye-bye. You do a project and you carry on. And the support is not necessarily always financial. Yeah, it could be manpower. It could be training people. It could be like providing entrance to the climbing, or it could be like providing a gear as well, or things like marketing or mentorship. So there are different layers we can do. But also, we try to make them understand what it is to make climbing accessible. I give you a little story, which is my favorite lately. I have a friend, I was talking about making climbing accessible, and the friend suggested, but is there really cheap shoes at £40? And I said to her, you know, like £40 is a lot of money for some people. Some people, they can't even afford a £1.50 bus ride. And the issue with climbing and getting people into climbing, doesn't start at the wall. It starts way before that. So how do we make people understand that accessibility is not just like, give us a discount for the people to get into climbing? You have to understand the whole journey of that person to come to there first. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate people about what is it to be accessible, what is it to be equitable as well. So it's not always like, I mean, it's not simple, but like if you have those conversations and people understand that the bias to go into climbing is not just the financial. There's also the lack of representation. If you don't see people that look like you and go to places, you don't want to go there. And we have examples of that. We have people who say that to us, that they didn't know they could go climbing. I'm a black woman, and I have met many black girls and women who told me they didn't know black women were climbing. I'm like, everyone climbs. For me, everyone can do it, but it's because I know that. But they didn't know, they didn't assume. I'm RCA in training, and we took a group of black women our side, and some of them were like, oh, wow, it's amazing that you're doing that, because we didn't know this. There is a space for us.
Mm. And it's so almost like
this little thing.
It's our favourite line, isn't it, Marie? It's our favourite line. You cannot be what you do not see.
See, yeah, exactly. And it's the same with the Power Climbers. The Power Climbers Collective is just like such an amazing bunch of people. And they're from all different walk of life. And I think a lot of people, when they see us coming to climbing walls, they're just amazing. They're just amazed. Because like you would see people coming in Wiltshire and suddenly they're crushing it on the wall, and I can see the look of bewilderment. But I like that. I like that because people now they can you know like it's that the thing we do that we have to change the mindset of people of what it is to be equitable and inclusive.
I think you're so right, Marie, that it has to be sustainable. It isn't just like, okay, we give you this money and this one project, bye-bye. It has a big focus of what United We Climb want to do is that sustainability element. How can this continue? And I guess in answer to your million-dollar question is, well, we're working on it. Our first step is we're doing some research. We're conducting some research of our own. We're doing some... because the ultimate aim is we would like to provide some training to climbing walls that would like to access it about how to provide an equitable, accessible climbing experience. But we would like that training to be focused on things that are real life experiences of members of the community that are not accessing or are struggling or have those barriers. So therefore, we're conducting some research. We're mid-process, which is really exciting. We're going to have some focus groups. Initially, our focus groups are paraclimbers, black and ethnic minority climbers, and LGBTQ plus climbers. Those are just our initial focus groups. We would love to expand it to other groups. We're trying to keep it sort of contained for now.
And these are people who are interested in indoor climbing, or does it include sports, bouldering, track climbing, like whatever discipline?
Yeah, well, I would love to sort of include in from my point of view, as sort of I'm helping to draft the sort of focus group scripts at the moment, actually. From my point of view, I'd like to hear about their experiences of all types of climbing. But with the focus that this is going initially to climbing walls, but I think actually it will go to outdoor instructors too. We would love to be able to influence outdoor instructors. We'd like to be able to have an impact as far as we can. I think our first impact would be sort of those indoor climbing walls where that's where the most majority of our climbers are accessing at the moment, or not accessing, rather. You know, we don't, but we want to hear it from them. You know, even though I'm a paraclimber myself, I wouldn't want to assume that my barriers to climbing are exactly the same of that of another climber and design a whole training based on that. We want sort of evidence-based training, and yeah, that then we're sort of going to develop a program. We've got a grant for that from one of our partners, one of the brands that supports us, and they've been incredible. We've been really thankful and so chuffed to be partnered with Arc'teryx. They also, to make climbing accessible for our communities, they also have already, so not only have they given us a grant to fund our research and our sort of our training program, they've given us the funding specifically is for the development of the training program, not for the research itself, it's for the development of it, but our research is kind of linked to that. They've also given us free like punches, so free entries to one sort of set of climbing walls that's all over London, so our communities can access it. We do a variety of sessions throughout the month on a sort of monthly rolling basis for our communities. Both Maria and I help facilitate different ones, and they've given, for those that can't access it due to financial reasons, they've put some punches on the system and we can sort of give those out on a needs-based basis, and it's really fantastic. So yeah, shout out to Arc'teryx, thank you.
Nice one. What's the timescale for your kind of research, for the training, for, I guess, climbing centres going, oh, okay, we need some of this. We know that we need some of this. How quickly can you start changing things?
It's very interesting. It's a very interesting question, because in terms of timescale, it's quite complicated, isn't it? Yes, I'm working 9 to 5. Program administrator for university. Yasmin is having a beyond job. She PhD, child psychologist, whatever. Rachel got a family, she got her own business. So those things are taking quite a bit of time because we all volunteer. So it does take a lot of organizing and admin. And so I'm hoping but next year we will be done. But like I said, it's because we're all doing it, we have a team of volunteers, we all volunteer, nobody's getting paid, and we're doing that alongside our lives. Do you want to add anything?
No, yes. I was going to say exactly the same. I think it's so important to emphasise that we are all doing this on a voluntary basis right now, just because we are so passionate about it. Yeah, that's literally what we're doing. Timeline-wise, we would like to, by the end of this calendar year, have completed our research and have a sort of draft out, sort of pilot out for the training. Whether that's realistic, I hope so. I'm a bit I've just finished a doctorate almost. I've been a bit busy with that, but it that frees me up a little bit, but then you never know what will come up. And yeah, so we're all doing this sort of on a voluntary basis, and we want to put as much time into it as possible, but there are only so many hours in the day, and we do also want to go climbing ourselves.
It's kind of a gnarly problem, isn't it? The idea of wanting to reach audiences who don't necessarily know they have permission or a space that they can get involved with outdoor activities, that you're kind of getting stuck into the much bigger societal issues of poverty, of access, of deprivation or privilege. How do you reach the people who aren't already kind of hovering around the leaflet stand going, oh, wait, I see something that kind of takes my interest. Maybe I could. Look, there's someone who looks like me. They're not even seeing it because they're so far away from that first step. How do you reach those people?
There is a lot of networking. There's a lot of like posting, being visible, going to all the climbing walls. I think, yes, you're very good at doing the all of London stuff. I'm doing a lot of outdoor, being in touch with all the companies that want to do stuff, like the Black Dog outdoors as well, like they want to support. So it's about doing collaboration, about reposting other people's stuff. So you keep churning that machine where you have different groups. Like, for example, we're supporting quite a few groups that set up by themselves because they found their ways in the need. So we got Climb Move, we got the Wanderers of Color, we got the Para Climbing Collective, we got the Asian Climbing Crews. There's a few women of colors in Sheffield. There's a group, I think, LGBTQA plus in Sheffield. So it's about building this network of people and supporting them. So, you know, it's within. Ideally, you want everyone to come and climb and go about their business. It's just on your climbing. But the thing, the reality is, all those groups, they need support for getting out there. And you will find that different groups have different needs. So some groups are quite good at doing by themselves and going out there. And some groups, they might need a little bit more support.
Yeah, and I think as well, you're right that a lot of the networking we've done is we almost see ourselves with these sort of smaller groups, we almost see ourselves in an umbrella to support them. Like, they're their own groups, but we support as much as we can. But they almost have then their own networking ability. So, for example, as you said, Climbers is run by a good friend of ours, Sidra, and Sidra therefore is doing her own networking within the Muslim community. So we've almost got such a wide network of different groups there. But to reach those people, those real like hard to access groups that don't even know climbing exists, we sort of, Rachel's done quite a bit of work about this, our other director, Rachel. There's three of us, she's the other one. And she's been in contact with like sort of local community trusts, so up in Sheffield, and they've organized sort of like community events, like for people who've literally never heard of climbing. They had this boulder in a park, you know, those sort of play structures, and they did stuff to do with that, and it was just an area community thing. And so she's been really good in Sheffield at networking up there and trying to reach out there. So yeah, I think it is difficult because how do you reach a hard to reach population? That is an eternal question.
For our listeners, the organisation that you mentioned, Climbers, is Climb Muz, as in Muslim Climbers. If you're reading the transcript, that's going to be pretty sensible to you. But for those listening, that's what we're talking about.
Well, I was going to say as well, it's very interesting. I had, we have someone who approached us and said they wanted to have a bit more diversity within the community. And I had a conversation with someone else, and that person was saying, if you want to have more diversity, don't wait for the diversity to come to you. Go to them. So you have to go to the places where you have more diverse people, because they don't know you exist and they can't come to you. So it's a both way thing. So you can't just expect that people will come to you. You have to go to them and say, but also there is another thing as well. Within your community, if you want to have more diversity, you have to show them diversity as well. There's like, you have to show them that you have people within your community that are diverse, that look like them. Because there's this, you know, people, they like to see a king.
Yeah.
It's and a weird thing. It's a societal thing, you know, yeah. Like.
It's going back to that, almost that first point of, you know, well, why weren't we phased when we first started? And I do also believe that that's because of the kind of people that we both are. And I think that,
like, just in terms of your personality.
Yes. And yeah. I don't think that they're, are, as you know, a lot of people that sort of go, okay, well, I don't care. There are a lot of people that look at the community around them and go, I can't see anyone like me, you know, I feel uncomfortable. I'm very like, oh well, I'm gonna go stand in this crowd. We're both very like that, but that's actually not the norm, I think. This is why we've kind of found ourselves in this position, in this organization, I believe, because we're kind of break the cycle people, almost, in inverted commas. You know, it is a cycle of, well, you don't see the people, so they're not there, but then they're not there, so you don't see them. And but we're very much like, okay, but we don't care about that, but a lot of people do. So yeah.
it is a weird one, because when I started climbing, I didn't see many people like me, but I didn't care. I just wanted to climb. I just wanted to enjoy it, and like I joined my club that were all nice, and I'm like, oh yes, brilliant, I had to buy a tent, let's go. But not everyone has that resilience and confidence, and you know, I don't say I'm not shy or anything like that. I have my moment. But I have to say, when it comes to do things, I just go about it. And this is why I want to empower people to go into climbing. So the way we do it, I know there's different affinities group everywhere, but ideally you want the affinities group separately, you know, whatever group they are, they're going climbing. They get the confidence, and then they can go climbing by themselves. Like they have, they know now the environment where they're going is going to be safe, so they can go by themselves as well. So it's like almost you introducing, come to a group, come to this wall. Now you know the wall, you're familiar with it. You can come by yourself because you'll be fine. And ideally, you want everyone to have that, but not everyone is like that. And this is what we're trying to do.
So this idea of the affinity group, so a group where for people who share some kind of specific aspect of their identity.
Community group, if you want.
Yeah. So I guess that's a stepping stone towards a future where genuinely people don't see the difference and it is accessible regardless.
Well, I think there's a lot of controversy, actually. Not controversy, more like split opinions, I would say. I would say that a lot of people, personally, I think we would like it to be that, yes, it is that affinity groups exist because people need affinity groups. They need that safety. And sometimes they just need a place where they can be with people that share those characteristics, but also the role of an affinity group. And it can be both and. It doesn't have to be either or. Both. So the other role of an affinity group is to allow people to participate in the wider climbing community and to give them that stepping stone. Whereas I think a lot of people see, and we've seen this backlash, unfortunately, on Instagram, where people see affinity groups and saying it's segregation.
And yeah, but it kind of promotes division.
Yes. And, you know, we would argue to that actually, no, it promotes safety. It promotes that community to feel accepted, to feel safe, to feel belonging. Belonging is a big factor in whether people take something up or not, including a job, this is where my sort of psychology ability intersects with climbing. We know that, especially actually in children and young people in my research, in a school community, there's so much research on school belonging, and it's the same in adults. We know that belonging is such a big factor in whether someone continues to do something or whether someone's mental health is positively affected by something, whether they feel they belong. It's a basic human characteristic. We have evolved to feel like we need to be accepted in groups, in, you know, to be kept safe. It's an evolutionary response. So I think that affinity groups empower that, and actually, okay, some people might only ever want to climb in their affinity group, and that's their choice. But if that person feels from their affinity group that that has enabled them to feel safe at a wall and then go by themselves or in a pair, or then, you know, that's amazing. Then we have, you know, done a service to the community, we've done a service to them. And I think that, yeah, it can be a both and situation. It doesn't have to be an either or.
How much work is there, do you think, for people who are in the majority to actually acknowledge all the things that they take for granted? I noticed on your inclusive climbing Facebook group, you know, there's the kind of group rules, the regular ones, you know, be polite, no spam, blah, blah, blah. But then the last one was check your privilege, and it explains it. I'm going to read what you've written. Do the work around your privileges. No white supremacy, fragility, racism, ableism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, or other isms here. If you get called out, be open to the learning opportunity. How much of your work, United We Climb, how much of your work is actually with the majority white, cis, straight, able-bodied, male, perhaps, climbing community to go, folks, you've got some work to do here.
I think a lot of it. I think
it's a lot of it because Yaz and I, we know, we've been talking to some organization, and both separately or together at some point. And it's really interesting to see how they don't fully understand what is it to be inclusive. They don't fully understand.
Can you give me an example?
Like if you have a session, for example, just lowering down the music because you have people with you know, who are neurodiverse. And people, it's almost mind-blowing to them that it's like we ask that. Or asking for a disc.
There's a lack of trust, isn't there, Marie? That's what we've almost seen, is that we, even as people that are part of a community that are, you know, I am myself neurodivergent, people that are part of that say, well, actually, it would really help if X, Y, and Z, say you lower the music, and say it repeatedly and say it will also help this group and it will also help this group, and then they don't do it. It's almost like, yeah, there's a lack of trust because they almost, it just, because it doesn't affect them.
They don't understand it. It doesn't hit. And sometimes it's really difficult to get into the position to say, yeah, the reason we ask that is not to make your life difficult. We actually trying to create an environment. We don't ask it to be like all the time, just for the time we're here as a group, because we bring in business as well. You know, we understand we have a few little demons, but like we're trying to make it like so those people who need that special requirement come back to you. They will come back because you make them feel welcome. And sometimes that's difficult. There's also a difficult conversation we had about discount accessibility, especially within the disabled community, where people don't understand that, you know, sometimes we don't have the money. Like there's no income.
It's exactly what you said, Marie, that people don't even think about the journey to the climbing wall. Climbing doesn't just start at the wall. And, you know, people who are disabled, research has found that people who are disabled on average have what they call a disability tax. So people who are disabled on average have to spend £583 per month more than their able-bodied counterparts on things related to disability. Now, that's just an average. It could be more, it could be less. And that in itself has such an impact, as you can imagine, on...
Can you give me an example of what that £583 might get spent on?
Yeah, so I can give you examples from my life, for example. So there are some days I'm lucky enough that... Well, I'm not lucky. I am needy enough that I have a Freedom Pass, which means I can use Transport for London stuff for free. However, there are days where my pain is so severe that I cannot face getting on a tube. I will therefore, if I want to go somewhere, have to take a taxi. That's an extra cost. I will have to think about that, the cost of that taxi. Additionally, as it's a sort of monthly average, that additionally I have to pay every time I get my glasses done, I have to pay for a tint. What the people who are listening can't see is that my glasses are tinted. They have a precision tint on them. So not only every time my prescription changes do I have to pay for new lenses, I have to pay for a new tint. That's extra cost related to my disability. What you also can't see, I'm sitting on a chair that has a specific cushion on it. I have one of these on my office chair. I have one in my car. I have one to prevent, so I have a connective tissue disorder. It prevents my spine from misaligning as I sit. It's all these different little things that kind of add up that you just don't even think about. Every move, I kind of have to think, well, how's this going to impact my disability? And there are financial elements to that. And I think that, yeah, we had a big thing with the paraclimbing community where actually people were not able to access even the concession price that was being offered because it was so high, and people, yeah, don't understand these sort of hidden costs of disability. So we're really trying to disseminate that research that was done by the disability charity Scope, and they've called it the disability tax, and it's a really useful document to read if you want to, and it does explain those additional costs and give a real sort of justification of actually why people who are disabled do need to have financial considerations as well as physical access considerations when they are trying to go to sort of a event like one of ours.
It strikes me so strongly talking to you both that this idea that the burden of making climbing more diverse, more equitable, falls disproportionately on the people who already perhaps have more burden, is that fair to say? In that experience, the people who have it easy, who stroll up, take it all for granted, are going, oh, well, thanks Yasmin, thanks Marie for doing all that work, because it is, you know, it's good, well done you, pat on the head. It's so easy to default to the idea that this is work that you should be doing. It isn't, is it? It should be work that everybody should be doing.
I think that's the idea, that idea of privilege as well, isn't it? And checking your privilege. And I think that a lot of people become defensive when talking about privilege as well. And I think it's worth mentioning this. And this is the way I explain it, because privilege is, I think, not something... So I've had experiences where I've had white friends get very defensive going, oh, white privilege isn't a thing, blah, 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 because I'm working class, I'm disabled, I'm this, therefore I've had it hard too. And I've explained to them, no, that's not what the concept of privilege is about. Yes, you don't have able-bodied privilege, so something that an able-bodied person can do without thinking, without... you don't have. And yes, you don't have, you know, upper class financial privilege, but you do have white privilege. Privilege is not about having it easy or having your whole life handed to you on a plate. Privilege is about those specific experiences that you do or don't have to face because of a characteristic that you do or don't have. And I think that it's really important to define it as that, because people become... They hear terms and they become very defensive about them. And I think the first step in removing this defensiveness and enabling this self-learning is to really help people to think about it, in that no one's saying you've got it easy. I think everyone has hardships. Everyone faces different things in their life. But it's about thinking, well, actually, what in my life have I not had to think about? What in my life has someone who has a specific characteristic that I don't have not even been able, you know, to access, to think about, you know, just because they have a characteristic? And I think it's really important to think of it like that, to try and help remove some of this defensiveness, because you're as you read out for us, I think learning opportunities are what we hope to facilitate as well. And everyone's going to be at a different stage of their learning, in terms of their anti-racist learning, in terms of their every part of diversity and inclusion learning. People are going to be at different stages. People are going to be a bit different stages of learning about themselves and about what they've had to sort of experience, about perhaps past trauma, anything. You know, people are going to be at really different stages. And I think it's about us just being able to facilitate that next step for that person.
We're coming to the end of our time together. If it's fair to say, if there was one thing that you would want listeners of the podcast to think about and then actually do, what would it be?
I think for me is be curious. Check your assumptions. Before you say something to someone, before you think something about someone, take a step back. Ask yourself where that assumption's coming from. Just be curious. If you're going to ask a question, ask sensitively. Ask if it's the right time. And yeah, be open, be curious, and keep learning.
How about you, Marie?
I would say be welcoming, be kind, be friendly, just say hello. You know, we don't ask much. If you see someone who's different from you, just say hi, a smile. It's all it takes sometimes. Don't stare. Stop staring. Wow. But yes.
Do you just get stared? I mean, is that like literally the expression of people are just staring at you?
Oh, I had a cross home. Dead stare. And because I'm a bit cheeky, I just look at the person and I smile.
Yeah. And actually, we had an occasion where you were with Rachel and I, and actually, I think if you'd have been with anyone else, they wouldn't have noticed. But because you were with Rachel and I, we were like, is this actually happening? Yeah.
And is it an aggressive stare? A curious stare? Like, what kind of... is
No, it wasn't kind of... friendly. Some of them, they're not friendly. So, like, the one with the cross arm was just like deadpan stares. Like,
sometimes it's really...
Yeah,
it's almost like they're questioning, isn't it? Like I felt like at that they were almost judging your belay ability. They were almost like, look at your ability, which I was getting very angry about.
Sorry, but I can't be angry. I can be angry. And like I said to someone not long ago, as a black woman, I can't be angry because people's going to remember my action, not what I say.
Oh, then you're the angry black woman.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
That was my case. Yes. So, know, you have to be able to look in and you have to be able to, because this is a thing, you can't be angry all the time. You can't be angry. You have to rational things and you have to almost be compassionate and understanding toward the other person and saying, okay, they haven't seen this before. I'm going to show them in a nice manner what I am. Because I'm not a nasty person, I'm a nice person.
That's my goodness, you guys are saints.
But we're practicing what we preach. We're being open, we're being curious, we're thinking, actually, maybe that person, actually, we were in Sheffield, maybe that person has actually never seen a black person at a climbing wall before. Maybe they haven't. And actually, how can we change that perception? And how can... and. Yes, as you said before, the responsibility shouldn't be on our shoulders, but we want to practice what we preach and we want to do what we can and, yeah, be kind, be welcoming ourselves and be open and be curious ourselves, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess give people the benefit of the doubt in assuming that their behaviour or their action is based on ignorance rather than malice.
Yeah.
And so there's an opportunity for education and sharing and building relationships, I guess.
I would hope so.
Me too.
Well, I think you guys are ace. What is next for United We Climb? You've got your training program, the rest of your research program. I mean, that's going to be keeping you busy for sure.
Yes, I'm working on the pathway, which is like getting my instructor, rock climbing instructor qualification. So it's one of the pathways we have. We already have the way we do it, there's like, is a training or mentorship, like mentoring people. We have one person who went through the whole cycle already, who got like the mentoring and the help to get into training, and then now it's employed. So that's next in a sense. Yasmin, anything else?
Yeah, I think to grow our team, to grow our capacity, to grow our our resources, to grow our income, essentially to make what we do sustainable. So I think, we would love to have merchandise because people, we've all got team sort of T-shirts. And actually, I get approached in the climbing wall and people say, what is United We Climb? And it's a great opportunity for me to say, well, United We Climb, and give them the whole spiel. So actually, we would love to have merchandise. I think to carry on with helping our affinity groups as well, helping them expand, support as many groups as we can. I think
taking people outdoors as
getting people outdoors, which is actually very hard because there are insurance things involved in that.
Instructor insurance, helmet, harnesses, all those things. Yeah.
So I think we would like to be able to grow in what we can provide to our community and the industry in general. I personally would love if we were sort of a nationally recognised organisation within the climbing community, where people say almost we could be, you know, giving consultative services on a paid and not voluntary basis one day, where people say to us, say, well, actually, we have got this problem with accessibility. We've noticed that this community are not accessing our wall. We've noticed we've got this equity issue. Oh, where do we go? We go to United We Climb. You know, I would love that to be like, that's like my ideal magic wand situation. Yes, so, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I wish you the absolute best of luck, and I look forward to watching you grow and flourish, because, crikey, you guys have chops and dynamism and ambition, which is so badly needed.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so we are going to finish off with our quick fire questions. These are 10 questions we ask our guests on Finding Our Way. Are you ready? And I'm going to, just for, you know, keeping things neat and tidy, let's go Marie and then Yasmin for each answer.
Perfect.
Okay, question number one. Describe yourself in 3 words.
Friendly, bubby, trad climber.
Climber, psychologist, hat lady, is that one word?
Hat lady, let's hyphenate it.
Yeah.
Favourite mountain or crag snack, or wall snack if you're indoor climbing?
Peanut butter. Peanut butter.
Crunchy or smooth?
Oh, crunchy.
Obviously.
Oh, no, sorry. Yes. You're allergic to nuts, right?
Yeah, but it's fine. You can eat them around me. I always have a Lucozen on me. It's not a snack, but it's my fuel. Always a Lucozen.
Oh, can I change it? Candy kitten, because I can share it with my friend because it's vegan.
Oh, look at you. Inclusive to the last. Eat the peanut butter and then you don't need to share. No, whatever. Okay, best mountain, outdoor or climbing memory?
Fighting flying buttress. I'm obsessed. It took me a year. And it's not the E1, it's the HVD.
For me, physically hugging the rock after lockdown, like coming out and like really quite scaring my friend going, I love the rock. I think he's a bit traumatised.
Question number 4, bucket list destination.
Thailand, Australia, going back Guadeloupe to see my mum again. Vietnam, I love food. I love travel by food.
Okay. Well, I think everyone says Kalymnos is a good climbing place. Somewhere sort of, Greek island-y with lots of climbing.
Hot and fun.
Yeah, hot and climbing y and fun, yeah.
Okay, nice. How often do you get lost, Marie?
All the time. She's laughing
already. It's a miracle she found her laptop for this podcast. If you could go for a climb with someone famous, who would it be? Either climbing famous or, you know, outside world famous.
Lynn Hill. Oh!
I don't know who Lynn. Is that a climber?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, fine. Okay, yes. Yasmin?
Glenn Moffat. Sorry.
Is that for Yasmin? Or are you having her as well?
Who would I go climbing with famous? That's a really hard one.
Or not famous. Who's your favourite person to go climbing with then?
Oh, all the paraclimbers.
Can't choose a favourite.
No, I actually can't.
Chocolate or cheese?
Chocolate.
85%. Chocolate. Always chocolate for me.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
A sloth.
A sloth?
Yeah. Climbing efficiency.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd be a cat. I was always told, I've always been told, I sleep enough and I just sleep and cuddle and yeah, I'm a cat.
Aww. One thing you always carry in your climbing bag?
My shoes.
Fair answer.
Climbing shoes.
Yasmin?
Climbing shoes.
I'm like a walk.
Tape!
What?
Tape.
I'm like a walking pharmacy. If anyone ever needs like paracetamol, plasters, I've always got that. So I'm like, yeah.
She's got all of it.
I'm the walking pharmacy.
What does climbing mean to you?
Everything.
Oh, I can't really top that, can I? It's my happy place. It's my escapism. It's my social life at times. It means the world to me as well.
Yeah.
And lastly, we want more of you. Where do we go? This is your chance to plug your social media handles, website,
At United We Climb, at Mi Josie, at UK Paraclimbing Collective.
UK.paraclimbing.collective.
Yeah, you know the dot thing. I'm dyspactic. What do I know about dots?
I'm at the.climb.2.healthy. On Instagram, lots of dots. I know the dots. I think those are key ones.
We have a website, United We Climb,
and you've got open surveys at the moment. So if people are interested and they want to contribute to your research, they can go to your website.
We will be recruiting for our focus groups very soon. So watch out for that. I would say we'd love. We always want to hear from people about their experiences in climbing, and actually probably the easiest way to get us is on Instagram. So I would say definitely shoot us a DM there, and we just love to hear from you, really.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And listeners, don't worry. You don't need to work out where all those dots go. Just go to the show notes on the BMC website and all the links will be there. And the same for if you're accessing the transcript. Thank you so much, Yasmin and Marie. This has been an excellent conversation, and I think that you guys are ace. And thank you also for listening. If you liked what you heard, subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Share the podcast with friends, and please do let us know what you think. Use @TeamBMC on Instagram and Twitter, and #FindingOurWay. I'll see you soon. Finding Our Way is brought to you by the British Mountaineering Council and is kindly supported by Berghaus. This episode was hosted and recorded by me, Marianne O'Hotter, edited by Chris Stone, and the show notes and transcript were produced by Tom Bennett. Well, hey folks, if you like this podcast, why don't you check out the other BMC podcast? This one's a hill walking podcast called Wild Horizons, where each episode Niall Grimes chooses a mountain, range, ridge or path and chats to someone who both knows and loves that place. You can find all the episodes at thebmc.co.uk/wildhorizons.